Good afternoon.
Thank you.
And welcome to the Education Finance Committee. The committee will come to order. And I believe we do have a quorum present, so we can go ahead and get going. Today is obviously our first organizational meeting, and we'll have some overview presented by our nonpartisan research and fiscal analyst staff. But first, I want to just welcome all of you to the Education Finance Committee. It's my first opportunity to chair a committee in the House, and I am thrilled to be doing that, but also really, really pleased with the people that I will be serving with on this committee. Many of you I've had the chance to serve with on education in the past or other committees here in the House, and I think we've got a terrific lineup of people, and we'll work well together. So I want to particularly thank Representative Murphy, who is the committee lead with the DFL party, and we had a nice chance to chat for a few minutes yesterday, and I will share with all of you what I shared with Representative Murphy, which is that I hope that we will be able to do as much work bipartisanly as possible, and I think with everyone knowing that educating our children is one of the most important things that we do here in the state, one of our most important responsibilities, with that in mind, that we will be able to do very good work together. So just I'll call to your attention first the folders, and we'll kind of go over some just basic organizational things before we get to introductions. In your folders, and this is probably the same for most of the committee's procedures, but anything that is in your folder, if you want it saved, be sure to put it in the save file. Anything that is not, because we have a lot of paper to deal with here, will be recycled. So please retain it in your save folder. If for any reason you forgot to and need it, please contact our committee legislative assistant, Tim Smith, here to my left, or Jody Withers, our committee administrator, to my right, and we'll see if we can obtain that for you. But please try to save it. And also, a copy of the committee rules is in the folder. And so if you'd take a chance, I won't read through all of them for you. They're pretty standard, I think, from what I'm seeing most of the committees doing, that I'm other committees I'm on. But I will call your attention to just a couple of things. One is the 24-hour rule for filing amendments. I will be asking that amendments be filed 24 hours in advance. And that any bill requests, if a member has a bill that they would like to have heard in the committee, that you make a written request, and we will actually have a form to fill out for that purpose. And that way we can keep track. And we don't want anything to fall through the cracks or, just a casual mention on the floor. I want to make sure that all the bills that members have desire to have heard, that we can fit into the schedule, that we do that. So that will help us manage that. And I think with regards to the rest, again, on the 24-hour rule, if it's a very minor oral amendment in committee, again, to the discretion of the chair, but there may be some variance in that, but in general we would ask everyone to file in advance 24 hours. And my door will always be open to committee members. So if you have an idea or an amendment you'd like to run by me, or an idea about a bill or a hearing, or just want to talk over something that the committee will be dealing with, I do hope you'll know you can always contact me or, again, Mr. Withers or Mr. Smith about something that is on your mind. I will be meeting with all of you individually. I'd let you know that in an email, and in the process of scheduling those meetings. I just want a short sit down for about 15 minutes with each of you, just to find out any priorities or things that are important for the schools that you represent, ideas that you have for legislation, so that we can have all of those things in mind as we plan the committee's activities. And then just a couple of things on committee decorum as we move into hearing from testifiers and that. In general, I would ask that members not eat at the committee table. Beverages are fine. Try to be careful with that. I don't think we have coasters or anything like that, but if it's something that maybe is going to sweat on the table and is a cold glass, you might want to put something underneath it. And, of course, because I'm the chair, I'm going to break the first rule. I did bring cookies today, so feel free to help yourself to a cookie. There's ginger cookies or brownie cookies, and in that, but I thought just to get everybody off. And as you will find, some days that may be your lunch, and I'm sorry if that's the case for you today, since that little break period goes fast. But in general, I would ask that you not eat at the committee table. And that your attention is focused on the witnesses and the people that have taken their time to come and testify before the committee. We truly value the input and advice and suggestions we receive from, not only many organizations here, but just the general public, and would hope you'd all give them your full attention. I'm not going to have a hard and fast rule about laptops or electronic devices. However, if I feel that it's becoming distracting, we will create a more formal policy on that. So again, just I expect members to be courteous to the witnesses, and I think you can all respect that. So with that,
Madam Chair, could I ask a question?
Yes, Representative Bennett.
Excuse me for interrupting. What's the process if we need to leave to go talk to a constituent or for a quick meeting? Do you want us to notify you? We just leave? How does that? Do you have a preference?
Thank you, Representative Bennett. I think, obviously this happens frequently. You may have a constituent that comes to see you, and the only time you have available or that they can make it is while you're in committee. Certainly feel free to slip out into the hallway if you want to just mention to your seatmates or pass a note to Mr. Withers or Mr. Smith or myself and let me know that you need to step out and you'll be right back. It's fine. Really, I think unless we are in the midst of voting or getting close to voting, that's perfectly acceptable.
Okay, thanks.
Thank you. All right, I appreciate the question. And so any other questions about the rules? We will be sending them out as is required, probably the end of the day or first thing tomorrow morning. But if, in the meantime, if you have any questions or concerns about them, please don't hesitate to let me know. And so with that, I think we will proceed to introducing our staff. We could not do any of the important things we have to do here for the state of Minnesota without our wonderful staff. So I will start by introducing Jody Withers. Many of you have perhaps worked with Jody before. He has been committee administrator in the past with the Education Finance Committee and also has been researcher for the House Caucus as well. And then our committee legislative assistant is new with our staff. This is Tim Smith, and very pleased to have Tim on staff with us as well. Nonpartisan research and fiscal analyst. I'll start first with our fiscal analyst is Melissa Johnson, and our nonpartisan researcher is Tim Strom. Two excellent resources for all of you on anything, and I have not yet been able to stump either one of them, and I doubt I will as the committee goes forward. So I appreciate very much your expertise and the information you bring to us. GOP research is Gabrielle Hauge. Oh, Gabrielle's right there. And then our DFL researcher is Jessica Nyman. Welcome. Thanks. Glad to have both of you here. And then our committee page, do you want to come and introduce yourself, Simon and Dominique?
Madam Chair, my name is Simon Wenzel. I was a page last year at Education Policy under Chair Mariani. Hoping to do education policy again under Chair Erickson and education finance under myself. Good to be back.
Thank you. Glad to have you back.
Hi, Madam Chair and members. I'm Dominique Hudson. I'm also a committee page. We're not totally sure which committees we will have, but it's an honor to be here, and it's my first session, so I'm looking forward to it.
Very good. Well, welcome. We hope that you enjoy it. Thank you so much. Thank you for all your help and your good work. All right. So, I think we will now start with member introductions, and these are going on in all the committees. So what I would like to have each of you do, and I will call on you just in order of which I have you written down here, for the district you represent, if you want to share with us whatever occupation you have outside the legislature. Any comments you want to make about goals or expectations or, things, hopes you may have for our work this year? And then I'll throw in one ringer. If you have any kind of a vivid memory that you have from your days in school, somewhere between early ed and 12, that you wish to share with the committee and with the world at large, because we are being televised, so just fair warning, You are not required, but if you wish to share a memory from school, you may. So, again, I am Jennifer Loon. I am from Eden Prairie, and I represent about two-thirds of the city of Eden Prairie. I have one school district that I represent, and that is the Eden Prairie School District, where my own children have gone to school. I still have one in high school. She's a senior this year. I have worked in legislative policy, both in government at the federal level and in the private sector, before I ever came to the Minnesota House. And I was a full-time stay-at-home mom and community and school volunteer for a few years while my kids were little. And vivid memory, let's see. I shared one with Mr. Withers and Mr. Smith before we came down, but I don't think I'm going to do that in memory of poor Mrs. Nesham, who was my second-grade teacher. But I will say that I've had many wonderful teachers. I grew up in South Dakota in a very small farm community. There were 25 people in my graduating class, and I went to school with those same 25 people from kindergarten through senior in high school. So it was a very different experience than my own children have. But many teachers that shaped my life. I'll mention my sixth grade and junior high English teacher, Judy Falkstead, God rest her soul, who was a noted teacher for being very stern and very strict in the first few days of class, and we were all scared to death of her. But you found as you went through your years in junior high with her that she actually had a very soft heart under all that, and I can still diagram a sentence to this day because of and know the parts of speech well because of Judy Falkstead. So, and with that, I will now call on Representative Grisha.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and my apologies for the tardiness. I was stuck in another meeting. May I have two vivid memories?
You may.
Thank you, and I'll make them brief. So my first vivid memory that actually shaped who I was when I was in third grade, and I won't use the teacher's name, but I was told on a regular basis of what I would not become and where I would not go and that my future wasn't very bright. And every day, I've proven that person wrong, and that is one of the best things that. Sometimes it's the hard ones that in life that make you better. And I have some wonderful experiences, so that went into my teaching career as I looked at every kid that I ever dealt with, and I knew that they had much more potential than they were giving themselves credit for. And the second memory that I'll give is while I was teaching, and it's actually why I'm here today. When I was in Ivanhoe teaching seventh grade. Small kids at the time. I had a student who was a blonde-haired kid. His name was Scott. Absolutely fantastic kid. Cutest dimples you ever seen. He would sit in the back class and smile, but he was always in trouble. Never turned his homework and always messing around. But he was happy. And I was assigned to try to move him along and get his academic career going. And I just couldn't do it. As much as I met with Scott, as much as I tried to, Scott was always happy, but he just wouldn't do the work. And I was lamenting about this in the place. There was two places you go in school. One is the janitor's closet, and the other one was the industrial tech. And I was talking to my industrial tech teacher about this and why this was a problem, and he said, "Ron, get in the truck. We're going for a ride." And he took me to Scott's house. Scott had no running water. He had no electricity. Scott didn't know if his parents were going to come home, and if they were going to come home, if they were going to be sober. So Scott was coming to school in survival mode every day, and once I got that, I realized why Scott was happy. He had a safe and secure place to go. Academics were second. And so that Scott has stuck with me today. I haven't followed him through, but it's those kids that bring me to what I do every day and remind me that everything we do in policy can be wonderful, but if the kid's in survival mode, the kid's in survival mode. And so those are my two stories.
Thank you, Representative Christian. Do you want to share quickly your district that you represent?
I represent 9B, which is Morrison and parts of Todd County, and Little Falls is central to that. So.
Okay. And Representative Christian is our committee vice chair, so if I need to step out or step away, he'll be grabbing the gavel every once in a while. Representative Murphy, our committee lead.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm Mary Murphy. I graduated from Hermantown High School, District 700, and I represent people in Proctor High School District 704, Proctor Schools 704, and District 381, Lake Superior, Lake County, and District 709, which is the Duluth School District. And this is the fewest schools I've had to school districts I've had to represent since I came to the legislature. But when I came to the legislature, I was a full-time teacher. And I am no longer a full-time teacher in the sense that I retired from 709. I taught at Duluth Central High School for 33 years. And then in the last redistricting, I got back the area that I started my teaching career in. And last month, I joined the senior citizen group, of which some of those senior citizens in the homesteaders group were my students in my first years of 3 years of teaching. And so those 3 years plus the 33 years gave me the similar stories to what Representative Crenshaw talked. There are so many students that when I'm out and about and I'm campaigning, and I always know they were students when they say, "Hey, Miss Murphy, how are you?" It's always the Miss Murphy part that you catch. And then they tell me what's happened to them since they were 15. And it's just a warm, good feeling almost all the time. Sometimes you remember, and they made significant points in that you didn't hit that kid right. I mean, you weren't able to do what was needed for that kid at the time. And I always have regrets about that. But when they tell me their stories and find out that they are community members and they are parents and they are grandparents and they are contributing to our community, you have I had a warm feeling about what's happened. But our work on this committee is so important because we finance the policies that are established. And we are trying so hard to make the right decisions for the most people we possibly can. And we need to hear from the people in our communities and throughout the state on what the needs are. And if we are indeed in through our discussions, which I'm confident that we will have good discussions on all sides of the subjects that we're going to be dealing with, that we are making the best decisions based on the knowledge that we have before us at this time. Not saying that that won't have to be changed in the future, but I'm confident that we can continue the progress that's been made and go forward and come out with happy parents and students throughout the state.
Thank you, Representative Murphy. Yes, I think a goal that we all share. All right, Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Paul Anderson is my name, and I live about 150 miles northwest of here. My hometown is Starbuck, not the coffee, but it's a small rural town. My home district is Minnewaska, which is a combination of three towns, Glenwood, Starbuck, and Villard. But, you know, it's different out there. I represent parts of seven school districts, and one of them, BBE, which is Belgrade, Bruton, El Rosa, had gone to a four-day school week here a couple of years ago, and they really liked it. They thought it saved some money, and their tests were showing that the test results were about the same, but they're being forced to go back now to a five-day week, and there's some consternation about that. And I'd like to look at possibly allowing districts to have that local control of how they want to schedule their school week. I went to school to be a teacher. I came back home, and I'm a farmer is what my other job is, but I have a great deal of respect for those involved in education. And the one school story I would care to repeat in public, I guess, that I could, talks to me about the respect we have for good teachers that really help shape our lives. My fifth grade teacher still lives in the hometown where I currently live, and it's hard for me to call her by her first name. It's Mrs. Trone, and it's hard to say her first name because of that going back to fifth grade, which for me is quite a few years ago. But that's what we called her in school, and to have the most respect for her in the world. And she had a great impact on my life, and realize what teachers do for kids and to keep them on the straight and narrow, and they do such an important job with raising our kids and or educating our kids and showing them the right way to do it. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Ansells.
Well, thank you. I represent five school districts in northern Minnesota. I guess I'm the designated ranger on the committee. You'll be hearing a little bit through this session the difference between wool socks with holes in them and those of you who represent silk stocking school districts. You'll get to know a little bit more about me and what my values are as we get into discussion and debate. Lastly, I taught for 12 years and coached for 12 years at Hibbing High School. I had a little bit to do with Kevin McHale getting into the Hall of Fame, and I ended up in this hall. So, thank you.
Thank you. Representative Bennett.
Thank you, Madam Chair. It's an honor to serve on this committee, and I'm excited to work with everybody here. I'm Peggy Bennett. I'm from District 27A. That's the Albert Lea area, along with a number of smaller communities and quite a number of school districts as well. As for what one thing I've heard amongst the personnel I've started talking to is just the inequity and some of the funding, and they would like to see that evened out. So that's one area. As for teachers, I know that well because I am a teacher. I'm currently on a leave of absence. I've taught elementary school for 33 years, special ed also, and I love teaching. It's the greatest gift is to be able to input and help build a life. You know, it's how many people can say they've helped build a life. It's wonderful. So from a teacher's point of view, I know teachers would like to have freedom, more time to teach, and I would like to see paperwork and things like that reduced for them, and also unfunded mandates for districts. As for childhood memory, as much as I love being a teacher, when I was a kid in grade school, I remember sitting in my climbing tree very clearly, kind of daydreaming and thinking, there's one thing I will never be, and that's a teacher. And so I ended up being a teacher, and I love it, and I know I was meant to be a teacher. And it's interesting, as a young adult, I can remember saying, I will never get involved in politics. So, never say never. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Bennett. Representative Christensen.
Thanks, Madam Chair. I'm excited to be a part of this committee and work with everybody. I represent District 56A, which is Savage in Northwest Burnsville. And the school districts are Burnsville and Prior Lake School Districts, and then a little bit of the Shakopee School District. My vivid memory of my education was my high school government teacher teaching us how a bill becomes a law, and that most bills just die in committee.
Well, we will find out, won't we, Representative Christensen? Representative Dabney.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Representative Christensen, you had a good social studies teacher. I represent, like the chair, just one school district. I represent part of Minneapolis in that school district, where I also have two children who are thriving in that district. A sixth grader who had his school band performance this morning, a little bit of Mozart, a little bit of some other stuff, and then I've got a ninth grader who started at Minneapolis South High School this year and is having a fabulous experience. I was and am a teacher. I taught outside the metro area for 17 years and was, like Representative Murphy, a full-time teacher when I first came here. I now do some substitute teaching and having a great fun this fall being back in the classroom. I've got my son recently asked me about kindergarten memories, which is tough. It's a long time ago. But I have two brief ones. One, there was a little play area, dress-up sort of area and the like. And somehow I ended up with wood and made a sign. I'm a little fuzzy on how all that happened, but whatever word I put on the sign, I spelled correctly, but I wrote it backwards, right to left, rather than left to right. And what I remember was how quickly there was a parent meeting after I did that. It's the only time I've done it. I did it once. I apparently learned that, oh, left to right? Oh, okay. And moved on from there. But there was a very quick parent meeting. But the as I told my son the other day when he was asking about my kindergarten memories, we liked my kindergarten teacher, Mrs. Murphy, so much, we named the hamster after her.
That's a good teacher to get a hamster named after. Okay. Representative Detmer.
Yeah. Representative Detmer from Forest Lake, District 39A, which the three districts I represent is Forest Lake, Chisago Lakes, and Stillwater. And 34-year educator, teacher, coach. Does anybody know what Mr. Marquardt and I have in common, Representative Marquardt have in common?
Wrestling.
You're wrestling, that's right. I was a wrestling coach for 34 years. In fact, I'm back now. I do some subbing yet. They give me a call. And but when you're subbing, you can kind of say yes or no, you know. But I knew back in seventh grade that I wanted to be a teacher. I had some great teachers back then. In fact, I grew up, our school was a little one-room schoolhouse next to our farm. I grew up on a dairy farm, and my first 6 years was in a one-room schoolhouse, outdoor biffies. And anybody here experienced that? I would not trade that for anything. Mrs. Molnar, and then we consolidated with a two-room schoolhouse, Mrs. Molnar and Mrs. Damon, and I would never forget that. And how many have seen the movie Christmas Story? Okay. Remember the scene where the kids are out in the playground and I double dare you? I double dare you? Mm-hmm. That really happened. I wasn't the one that put my tongue on the post, though. But that actually happened, and it was a monkey bars. It was the climbing bars that had happened, and all of us ran in school just like they did there. We watched that film every Christmas, okay? And I remember sitting in the classroom, and the teacher says, "Where's Johnny?" And we all looked to the window. There he was, out there. She grabbed a cup of water, went down. Didn't have to call the fire station, the fire department, but she poured water on there, and yeah, that really happens. Has anybody ever done that? No. Newton, what'd you say?
No, we had a friend in school that
did. Okay.
Yeah, I won't require anyone to disclose, so you keep that to yourself.
But
if you
I can just say, you know, I knew in seventh grade I wanted to be an educator, I wanted to be a teacher, I wanted to be a coach. And if I was coming out of college right now, I would do it all over again. I retired in 2007. I was elected in 2006. I took a leave that first year, but the rule of 90 had caught up to me, which I think is a good rule. The rule of 90 caught up to me, and I did retire then after 2007. But I'd do it all over again. And I'm back coaching, by the way. An ex-student of mine who I coached, and he was my assistant for a while, he just got hired last fall, and he asked me to come back be an assistant. And the other three assistants, I coached them when they were in high school, too. So it's great. That's great. Thank you.
Wonderful. Thank you, Representative Detmer. Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Sandra Erickson. I represent the school districts of Princeton, Malacca, Onamia, Isle, Ogilvy, and then have students who also attend Mora, Zimmerman, Foley, Aiken. I'm a retired high school English teacher of 36 years, English and journalism. And, of course, you know that I was the teacher of the speaker.
so I'm very proud of that. And I think you noticed when I was in the podium, I was a pretty proud mom of Speaker Doubt becoming what he has become at such a young age. My memories, I loved school. I started first grade in 1948. And I had a very strict first grade teacher, but what she taught me when I got my hand slapped was that I better, for the most part, try to be the best student I could be. My third grade teacher was very influential in helping me to love English, and music came along later. And for an interesting tidbit, I'm starting my 50th year as our full-time church organist.
Fantastic. All right. Thank you. Representative Fenton.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I am from Woodbury. I'm Kelly Fenton. I'm from Woodbury. And we have students with South Washington County Schools, Stillwater Schools, as well as we have the Valley Crossing Community School, which is part of the Northeast Intermediate District 916. I am a former teacher and school administrator. Most of that was done in Texas. I've taught in three different states, Wisconsin, Texas, and Minnesota. It was my first grade teacher who made the greatest impact on me, and it was then that I pretty much knew that I wanted to be a teacher. I always finished my work a little bit early, so I was put to the task to help other students. But I was also raised by a teacher. And so I think one thing I remember most from that first grade year was picture day. When you get your pictures back, you cut your little pictures up, you give them out to your friends. Well, I took my mom's, and I cut her pictures up, and I gave them out to the entire class. So needless to say, when the parents were calling my mom, thanking her for her photo, she was very embarrassed. But I had a great experience this summer, and I went back down to the state of Texas to visit family, and I had started at second grade. That was my first teaching job with second grade, and I ran into a parent from one of my students who praised me for my intervention in helping the student with reading and talked about, had it not been for me, he would not have been as successful as he is now. And you hear about those stories all the time, but to encounter and hear from this parent 24 years later, was very impactful to know I really did make a difference. And I hope to continue to do that in my role here in public service to Woodbury in the state of Minnesota. So thank you so much.
Thank you very much. I appreciate you sharing that. Representative Hertas.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. And I'm Jerry Hertas. I represent District 33, which is the western part of Hennepin County. I live in Greenfield, which is the very most northwest community in Hennepin County, and in the Crow River Valley, a beautiful area of rolling hills, countryside, and old-growth forest. I wanted to thank Representative Kreisha's school teacher to... elementary school teacher to you should convey a message that reverse psychology does work. I have 11 school districts that serve 33 on my side of the district. 33A, there's 8 school districts. Half of those school districts wear wool stockings and the other half wear silk stockings. And we've had that conversation pass, and it's good to see many of the members back here again. I think as far as some of the things that impact me with regard to education, I had graduated from St. Louis Park High School. We had some outstanding teachers in that system. I recall a government civics teacher who really was impassioned about really pushing and challenging you to think. He would engage you. He would stand on top of his desk. He would spin your desk around if you weren't paying attention, particularly in my case. I recall very cold weather like we've been having, and all of a sudden I heard the windows slam open with the cold air just pouring in and my desk quickly being slid to the window while I was sitting in it, making sure that I paid attention. which I was guaranteed to do because, ironically, that teacher's backyard separated my backyard with a picket fence. Representative Detmer, you mentioned a movie. Does anybody remember Ferris Bueller's Day Off? That was my story. They wrote that movie after me. I actually impersonated my girlfriend's father, who I dated from the Hopkins High School, directed the school administration to have her standing out on the front steps of the school for a dentist appointment, which she did not have. And actually, when I saw that movie, I really thought they wrote the movie after a script that I had actually played out about 10 years earlier. But anyway, I'm very proud to be here and to serve on education. I have always had a great interest in our youth and in our children. I volunteer from time to time to come and speak in government classes and whatnot in our school districts now. I've done so in the past. It's a very privileged job to be a teacher. That's really, if you've ever done that, if you've ever had the privilege to, even just for one day, as I do once in a while, to stand in a rotating class of 6 hours and watch how the first class comes in a little dozy and naughty, and then they kind of perk up by second and third hour and fidgety during lunch hour, and then kind of nodding off again, and then all anxious to get the heck out of there by the end of the hour. But those are all things that I realize what a challenge it is day in and day out to come back and work with the kids. And in a certain way, even when I was a younger person and as a nurse, I had the same challenge of the idea that maybe if you're assigned to a ward or a unit and you're coming back every day to that same patient, sometimes it really is a challenge to want to keep that fire in your belly, because, you know, you just may get assigned a class that's a real challenge and maybe some children that are difficult to work with. But I applaud everybody who can stay in there, and I think the challenge of education today is to make sure that we have the very best teachers in our schools, and that fire and passion in their belly never burns out, and that they can really challenge kids and push them forward to really use their minds and to excel and be able to take care of themselves. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Mariani.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members, my name is Carlos Mariani. I'm a state representative from St. Paul. I live on the west side of St. Paul, which is right across, which is on the south side of St. Paul, by the way. southeast side, yeah. It's the west bank of the river. I have in my district, I have the downtown area, the capital itself sits in my district, and pretty much all the neighborhoods you can see north and south from the capital. St. Paul Schools is my only school district. It has fluctuated over the last few years. A few years ago, it was the largest school district. I can't remember where we're at now. I think in terms of student population, perhaps the second or the third largest school district in the state. It's probably, it is one of the most diverse school districts, although diversity is something that is becoming a norm throughout our state. I've had the privilege to chair the Education Policy Committee on and off over the last several years. Representative Erickson and I we just kind of keep trading it back and forth with one another. I've also had the privilege to serve with you, Madam Chair, on this very committee for a number of years. I am genuinely excited about your leadership, and I look forward to working with you closely. This is one of the, in my opinion, education committees are the most important committees in any state legislature. I can't think of anything more important that I could be doing as a public servant other than tending to the nurturing and the development of our young people so that they can grow up to be strong citizens and productive and happy human beings. Public education is the single most powerful institution outside of our family systems by which we can ensure that for our society. My hope for this year is that we can then maintain the level of minimal partisan differences, because we have those, and we're going to play some of those out here, I suspect, as well as in other arenas. But this committee, these two committees, have been the ones that where we have tended to minimize that quite a bit. I think there's just this collective wisdom that there's something much more important than partisan bickering, even though we have honest ideological differences. And that has to do with making sure that we provide good, stable, strong public education for our young people. My early memories, there's actually two, but I'll be very brief. They're kind of in contrast. I grew up in the inner city of Chicago, and one of my most vivid public school memories involved my community, which in 1968 literally physically blew up in conflagration for several days after the assassination of Dr. Martin Luther King. We were sent home early from school because everyone knew it was going to happen. And but actually that incident was really symptomatic of, in my mind, what happens too often for American young people, which is that they reside in communities of incredible tension and stress, and challenges that go beyond the cognitive challenges, academic challenges that students face. And I just think it's our responsibility not only to provide strong public schools, but to provide strong communities and strong societal, social dynamics to make sure that young people exist in a nurturing, caring, safe environment. My other memory, I didn't speak English when I first began school as a kindergartner, which is ironic because my Spanish really stinks right now. But one day in the first week of school, my mother asked me in Spanish, ¿Qué si que aprendí en la escuela? And I told her, Mom, aprendí airplane. And so I was sharing with her that the first kind of big word in English that I learned was the word airplane. And I suppose, like most young people, you know, I was really fascinated by those things that flew up in the sky, and I knew them as aviones, and now I knew them with another noun, the word airplane. And she was really, really proud. I can still see her face in front of me as I shared that with her. You know, education is the most powerful dynamic in a person's life. It certainly made it possible for me, as an immigrant's child who didn't speak English, to be able to sit with you here as a colleague and our elected representative government. And there's a lot of factors, but the single most important one is a good, strong, caring public education system. And so it's that spirit that I bring myself and my work to work with all of you here together. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Mariani. And let me just thank you very much for your kind words, and that I echo your sentiments in terms of the importance of our committee and the desire to work together in a very nonpartisan fashion as much as possible. Representative Marquardt.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. And first of all, congratulations, Madam Chair, on your chairmanship. And like Representative Mariani said, I really respected your work in the legislature and really look forward to working with you on this committee.
Thank you.
I'm Representative Paul Marquardt, represent District 4B, and I represent all or parts of 12 school districts. And I still, this is my 31st year of teaching at Dilworth, Glendon, Felton. I always teach right up until the session starts. I still love it. And I'll tell you what, you know, you hear sometimes some of the bad things about youth, but I will tell you that I am so impressed with our youth of today and having the honor to teach the students I do. Our hands are, the future is in good hands, that's for sure, with the youth that are coming up. And as mentioned by other legislators, I've always enjoyed this committee. It comes with great responsibility also, and I agree with what was said before. I firmly believe this is the most important committee in this legislature because it directly impacts the future quality of life of our residents and the economic strength of our state. And I think we've made some good progress in moving towards the world's best workforce, and with that, making sure that every single student has the opportunity to succeed, and that no matter where you live or who you are or what your income level is, that's what is really the strength of Minnesota's education. So I look forward to serving on this committee, and as you mentioned also, Madam Chair, we have just wonderful staff here that really make all of us legislators look really, really good. With that, wish the committee the very best.
Thank you, Representative Mark Wharton. Yes, we definitely have the A-team, which we will be continually thankful for. So, Representative Mullery.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm an attorney, and I represent about roughly the north 70% of North Minneapolis. My dad, I've never taught, but my dad taught for 39 years at Patrick Henry in Northside, which I think you probably remember because I think they set the state record for the most consecutive basketball championships. But from that, I learned how important teachers are. People still come up to me, even though he died 25 years ago, and tell me how he shaped their life and what they were doing in life is because of him. And this fall, they have alumni of Henry have, for about four decades that went there, have an annual luncheon. And this year, for the first time, they decided to honor one of the teachers. And they, as the first one they chose was my dad, because he shaped so many of their lives. So I'm very aware of how important that can be. My experiences, unfortunately, I have, like Representative Cresha, maybe a worse one. My kindergarten teacher, I know, told my parents that I was retired and shouldn't even be moving on. Not just held back, but should go to some kind of a separate school. Fortunately, they were teachers, and that killed that. But they just moved me to a different school where I did really well. But my other experience that I'll never forget was because my dad was a teacher at where I lived, I ended up wanting to go someplace else because of that, and I got almost full scholarship to a school in St. Paul, which I had never been in the building, only once even at the campus. My first day of class, I was looking for the class, and I said, where is such and such? And they told me, go down there and take a left down that hallway. I went to that corner and started down the hallway, and there was this large teacher who later I found out was a former NFL lineman, and he had a kid by one hand and bouncing him on the wall. And later that teacher was my teacher for math. But it's kind of funny, that kid turned out to be somebody probably everybody saw on TV. He's one of the four stars of Magnum PI, and then he was also the number two star of Black Sheep Squadron and various movies he was in. So some people can turn out. My most special interest is the early childhood from birth on, and I'm really happy. I know the chair has a very big interest in that, and so a lot of us in the whole area of early childhood are very encouraged about you being the chair. So the next thing is the achievement gap is obviously, or a lot of people call it the opportunity gap. And then outside, and of course that's within the schools, but also outside the programs that are so important to executive function, brain development, which without that, it's very hard for kids to have the right attitude and concentration and everything else that comes with a good IQ K-12 IQ experience in the classroom. So those are kind of all wrapped in. You need all of them. Unfortunately, there's many kids in Minnesota, not just on the north side, that aren't getting any of them or are held back in the K-12 classroom from some of the things that affect their brains. And the last thing about the importance of our committee is kids are our future, and if we don't grow them right and make them success in life, we're not going to have much success for the rest of our lives.
Thank you, Representative Mullery. Representative Newton.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I want to reiterate how pleased we all are that you're chairing this committee.
Thank you.
I think we're in for a good ride. I am Jerry Newton. I represent the areas of Coon Rapids, Blaine, and part of Spring Lake Park, and that is two school districts, the largest district in the state, which is District 11, and Spring Lake Park District, which is District 16. I don't have any, I had a lot of fun in school, but I don't have any specific, memories other than going to school. I was always excited to go to school. I never had a bad teacher. I mean, school for me was a treat the entire time. And I think my biggest challenge is sitting next to this gentleman who's always accusing me of taking money from Minneapolis schools to benefit in Okanagan.
And he admits it.
And I will do my best to do that.
Well, and Representative Newton, perhaps this is an opportunity for me to say that we set you all assigned seats today to make this a little easier for facilitating, but you will be free to sit wherever you would like for all future committee meetings. So, if it becomes a problem with Representative Mullery, just move on over. So, anyway, thank you. Representative Nornes.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Good to be here. Sorry I was late. I've been running late all day, so it's just one of those days.
It's a legislative phenomenon.
It is, yeah. Thank you. So, I appreciate being assigned to this committee. It ties in very well with higher education, where I'll be chairing that this session, and also serving on policy. So, interesting to hear the discussion. I've got a lot of memories. I went to a four-room school. Some of the older folks maybe went to a one-room school. I went to a four-room school. And it was kind of unique. It had one time been a high school. Imagine a high school in a building that small. It was K through high school. And so it was only K through, we didn't have kindergarten. So 1 through 8 is what we had now when I was there. And the uniqueness of it, the principal of the school lived in the building. So you can just imagine how that was. And my favorite memory of those years was the oldest son of the principal was a good friend of mine. And when we were about 8th or 9th grade, we actually built a radio station in that schoolhouse. So my little town of about 100 people had its radio station back in those days. We operated illegally for about 4 miles in all directions. And we played records, and we had a lot of fun doing that. But it was a unique opportunity that I wouldn't have had if I, first of all, didn't have a friend who was that smart and who happened to live in a building that had an empty room that became our studio. And it was just a once-in-a-lifetime. It's one of those, when I go back home, it's sort of like the thing people like to talk about. Those that are still alive, anyway, like to talk about the days when my hometown had its own radio station. So that's where my interest in that kind of peaked, where eventually I became a broadcaster, and that's what I've done for a living for about 36 years. One of the highlights, I almost became a teacher when I was in my first radio job in Thief River Falls. The tech school started a broadcast training program, and the person running the program was somebody that I had trained as a broadcaster. And he wanted me to come to work for him, with him, to run as another faculty member for this program. I never felt very confident that this was a long-term deal, as most teachers probably feel. It's a year-to-year thing. We didn't have tenure. So I didn't do it. But I thought about it because I thought I always wanted to be a teacher. It seemed like I'd make more money doing that. but I'll never know now because I chose not to do that. One of the memories, recent memories I have, two of them. Again, I went to Brown Institute back here in 61 and 62, and I was invited back on my 50th anniversary to speak to the Alumni Association, or to that graduating class as part of the alumni group. And I thought that was, you know, you get dressed up in robes and, you know, I felt either like a preacher or a professor. I wasn't sure what I was that day, but I don't look good in a robe, but anyway, I had to wear one. And then last spring, I had the same honor at the Alumni Association of my high school, where I was able to go back and address that organization, spend the day in the school talking to different classes. And that was really a very enjoyable day to hear what these kids are thinking. They were very interested in my story. So hopefully I inspired them a little bit. They inspired me a little bit. I got lost. This is really embarrassing because this is the high school where I spent 4 years. I'm lost in that building now and a little embarrassed. And I didn't realize it, but there's one classroom that has two doors, and they have the same number. So I was assigned to go back to address another class, but inside it was dark and the door was locked. There's something wrong here. So I ran back to the principal's office. I can't get in that building. I don't know what's going on. Turned out I was at the wrong door. I was one door off. And if that doesn't make you feel really dumb, and that's kind of, I remember in high school feeling that same feeling, but so now school has been something. I was elected to the school board. For somebody that really was not in, I liked school, but I wasn't what you'd call a really fabulous student. I was just doing what I needed to do. So I get elected to the school board, and my opponent happened to be the incumbent, who was a physician, a surgeon in our hospital. I thought, what are the chances of winning? And I did. And I guess maybe that was the start of something, because 12 years later, I had to leave that post to come here. So I mean, sometimes it's just luck. Life is sometimes just luck, timing, whatever you want to call it. But the most important job I've ever had is this one, by far, and appreciate being here.
Well, thank you, Representative Nornes. And I know, you know, with you chairing your own committee, you've got a lot of demands on your time as well. But I really wanted you on this committee and prevailed upon the powers that be to make sure, because it's so important that we have continuity in how we are educating our children from early childhood through high school and to be prepared for their post-secondary plan. So it's a well-made plan. I'm glad it worked out. So thank you. Representative Quam.
Hi, thank you. Dwayne Quam, 25A, live in Byron, and former member of that school board. There are still six school districts after redistricting before I had an additional five and four private, and also was on the chaired the Zed Governing Board, which had seven small districts cooperating together because we didn't have the critical mass to be able to hire teachers for and support staff for some of the programs for special ed and gifted and talented in that. You know, so I had exposure before legislature. My career outside has been a scientist and an R&D engineer, but in education I've been fortunate enough to be involved before here by I chaired the State Academic Science Standards Writing Committee, and I have appreciation for how the chair said we need that continuity, because if we don't tie in well with the college system, we are doing a disservice to the students. So that continuity is important. I also been involved in several MCA 2 committees, so understanding, you know, that portion. And on the corporate side, both as corporate and community, I've mentored, volunteered, tutored at 16 different schools and you see and learn, and that feeds into my goals, which is we need to understand what's working and what's not, stop spending money that's not working, and use that money for something that might, because we need to help the students that are in school, the ones that are coming to school, and in the future, to be able to be all they can be, have the skills, the resources to do in life what they need. And I think we need to do that with options, because students are individuals. And even though you bring them together in a school, they don't always fit together. And the same solution that's perfect here might not be perfect there. And so as we look at stuff, allowing options for the local districts, the local teachers and administrators to provide what the students need. And my story from when I was in school actually is two-part, but it fits into that. Students are not always the same. I didn't really fit in well, and in it was either fourth or fifth grade, we had a student teacher that I would correct and made cry, and had a meeting, and out of that came that some of our students in math, we would go in the back and have a self-paced and trade off who taught the advanced topics and work on that. In that group, two are doctors, one at Mayo, and another one headed the alternative propulsion system for the Air Force, and actually for a while filled in at Andrews when they were doing launches, being sort of the fill-in director. The second one that ties in is in algebra. I was bored, and one day after I corrected the teacher on three mistakes that he made on the board, I got to go to the library, and they had a computer system in a little room, and I taught myself how to program. So I sort of made opportunities, but I learned by not being in that same situation, and allowed me to develop skills and not do anything worse. So when we look at the students having options and remembering that they're individuals, I think is one of the things that I'm hoping to do in committee.
All right, thank you. Representative Peterson, welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Roz Peterson, and I am from House District 56B, which is Burnsville and Lakeville. It encompasses three school districts, which include Burnsville, Egan, and Savage, 191 school district, 194, which is Lakeville area, and 196, which is Rosemont, Apple Valley, and Egan. And I have served on the Lakeville Area School Board for the past 8 years and have served as chair as the last two, and also served on the Minnesota School Boards Association Board and the Minnesota State High School League Board. And I was told I'm supposed to give a little experience, but I'll just equate it to the model of teaching. When I went to school, was more or less the 1940s chalkboard model, and I have children that are 18 and 20 now. And when they were studying, it drove me crazy because they would have 18 things going on at once, and I couldn't handle it. And their style of learning is much, much different. And I think that we need to adapt our educational models to accommodate their style of learning instead of what we remember as when we grew up, and utilizing technology and having more individualized learning plans for all students. So I'm excited to serve.
All right. Thank you very much, and welcome. Representative Seltzer.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair, and I, too, am very excited about your leadership here, and I want to thank you for this exercise because I'm learning things that I don't think I would have the opportunity to learn about my colleagues here. So I'm Yvonne Seltzer, and I represent Southern Minnetonka and Northern Eden Prairie. I represent three school districts, Hopkins, Minnetonka, and Eden Prairie. I grew up in Winsted, Minnesota, and there were 51 kids in my graduating class, so much larger than yours, Representative Loon. And I grew up in my family's small business, and I spent a number of years in business, but my degree is in education, and I've taught in both the regular and the special education classroom. And I spent 8 years on the Hopkins School Board, and education obviously is my passion, and I've heard from each and every person here in a different way that they just want to make sure that every child reaches their full potential, and that's also my goal. And so for my experience, that was startling. It you know, I had great teachers, and Representative Hertas, I was the student they probably put you next to settle you down, so I don't have any real exciting stories to tell. But when I was a teacher, I had a young boy. His name was Richard, and he was just a wiggle worm. And he was in sixth grade, and Richard was every child blossoms at a different time, and he started to blossom in my classroom, and he got very excited when he would do well on a test. And I will never forget the day when Richard aced a test, and he was a wiggle worm, and he literally ran up the wall. So if we can make children that excited, all children that excited to learn, I'll be very happy.
Very good. Thank you, Representative Seltzer, and I'm very glad to have you on the committee as well. Representative Slocum.
It's hard to be at the end of the alphabet. Next time, let's go from the back to the front.
Duly noted.
I'm delighted that you're chair. I told you that before.
Thank you.
I think you're very fair-minded and very open-minded, and I appreciate that. I represent Richfield, the west and west and a southern part of Richfield. I might get it right this time. And then east to mid Bloomington, to central Bloomington. So it's, anyway, so the Richfield School District, the Bloomington School District. And you guys, I hate to break the mold, what a bunch of goody two-shoes. I hated school. I hated it. I was going to school back in the sit-down, shut-up days, and that didn't fly well with me because I was wiggly and I would hide from teachers. I was teacher's worst nightmare. I'm the wiggly one. You would have had to come sit by me because I was, like, all over. And I was suspended, okay? I got suspended one time. My parents got called. My dad had this belt, and he would call you down to the basement for the conversation. And the belt once. That was it. And then I knew I could go up to a certain line. And I found that line right away with every teacher. I can go here, I can dance here, and I'm doing it. La, 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 la. And I tried to also pull kids with me, you know. I mean, I was a naughty pants. If there's any justice in the world, my second daughter is just like me. And she's a teacher. I'm a recently retired teacher, and I taught in Minneapolis. I graduated from Washburn in Minneapolis. I live about a mile from where I grew up, and how's that for local, you know? But, we did bad things. I did bad things in high school, too. We broke into the auditorium. We'd bring food in and bring kids in, and if they would have caught us, we would have been in really big trouble, but it was so much fun. And I remember a couple of teachers fondly because they could do a dog and pony show that wouldn't quit, but most of them were sit down, shut up. And that just didn't fly. I am, that's why I support alternatives. That's why I support charter schools. And I was around when Representative Ken Nelson and Amber Reichka helped in Minnesota birth the charter school movement. It provides alternatives. I am of the philosophy that corporate charter schools don't belong with us, but that's my own personal opinion. I like them when they're started by teachers or parents. I like them when they come up from the grassroots, not when they come down from a corporation. So that tells you kind of my goals. This session would be expanding alternatives, particularly recovery schools, and looking at tweaking some of the charter stuff.
Great. Thank you, Representative Slocum. Appreciate that. And, you know,
people have the ability to share what they wish, and I have a feeling there may be a few people with more stories like yours, but, you know, we are on television and microphones today.
Well,
so
I want to also say, I taught for 25 years. They didn't call me Miss Slocum, they said Slocum. And I was like, well, it was middle school, so, you know. And I was the teacher that kind of knew stuff before it all shook down, because the kids taught. And I felt really good about that, because they trusted me enough to tell me things, good, bad, and indifferent. And both my daughters are teachers. My oldest teaches in an intermediate district north of St. Paul, Capital View. And my youngest teaches special ed in level 2 in Richfield. She was doing level 3. So, you know, I don't know. We're a family of teachers.
Okay. Thank you. Well, glad to have you on the committee very much. So, thank you. And last but not least, Representative Wills.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And it's an honor to go last and be able to figure out what I want to say after I've had a chance to listen to everyone. But honored to be on this committee. My name's Anna Wills. I represent Apple Valley, Rosemount, and Coates. And so I represent the Apple Valley, Rosemount, and Egan School District, as well as the Intermediate School District 917. And I have the honor of being the first homeschooler to be elected to the Minnesota Legislature, so I come to education issues with that perspective in mind and making sure that all educational options are the best they can be for families making decisions for their children's education. And then a few of my goals that I'm looking at, hoping to accomplish on this committee and also on the education policy side, as I serve on that as well, really funnel down to flexibility in funding for school districts and giving them the options to be able to use the funding at their discretion as much as possible. And then with that, reducing unfunded mandates. I feel like those go kind of hand in hand. And then as far as a memory, because I was homeschooled, I had the opportunity to do school with my siblings, so all different ages and working together. And I had the honor of privilege of being able to teach my little brother how to read when he was about 5 or 6 and I was about 17. So I don't know if you'd get that opportunity in a public school setting, but I'll never forget that. And seeing him get excited as he figured out the sounds and the letters and figuring out how to pronounce the words all on his own. So happy to be here.
Thank you. All right. Well, thank you, committee members. I guess it took a little longer than some of the introduction sessions in other committees, but there's one thing that I feel very strongly about, and we will be presented with information from experts and all kinds of people on ideas in education, but at the heart of legislating, this is a relationship business, and I want all of us to get to know each other a little bit and be able to work together well, and I think that will get the committee off to a good start. So I appreciate you all indulging me. Representative Hertas.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Maybe we could get introductions from our caucus researchers.
Of similar nature?
Yeah.
Do either of you want to share anything about your school days or otherwise?
Nothing comes to mind.
All right. I'm going to give staff the opportunity to just be anonymous on that point if they wish. But thank you, Representative Hertas. All right. We are going to start on, and we'll see how far we can get today. We'll finish up tomorrow, if not. But just to have our nonpartisan research and fiscal analyst, if you want to go ahead and move to the testifiers table, an overview that's sort of traditional at the beginning of a legislative session, new session, to talk about committee's purview and education finance. But because we have a number of new members, particularly on the GOP side, but a lot of other seasoned members, so I'm not going to have them go through everything, the finance system from beginning to end. In your folders, you all have the Financing Education in Minnesota handout, which is updated at the beginning of every session and really is a wonderful, wonderful resource to help explain the various complexities of financing education in the state of Minnesota, as well as the Minnesota School Finance Guide for Legislators. So I trust that you can all read those on your own, and if you have questions at any point, feel free to visit with Mr. Strom and Ms. Johnson or any of our staff about it. But what I've asked Mr. Strom and Ms. Johnson to do today is to really highlight changes that were made in significant areas of education finance over the last couple of years, so we can kind of refresh ourselves on sort of what's different or what's new and that. So with that, whoever is going to lead off, so Mr. Strom, if you want to introduce yourself for the record, and then please proceed. And I would ask the committee members, if it's all right with you, I think you've got, what, roughly about four topic areas you're going to cover. If you wouldn't mind holding your question until they finish their presentation on a topic area, and then we'll open it for questions, if that sounds all right. Okay. All right, Mr. Strom.
Thank you, Madam Chair, committee members. My name is Tim Strom from House Research. Ms. Johnson's task and mine today will be to walk through some of the more significant changes to the school funding system over the last couple of years. Our goal is to highlight the issues that where there may be big changes, both to point out those changes and also areas where you may find that the committee is going to act in the coming year. We've divided things into four topics. The first of these is the operating referendum and local optional revenue changes that occurred both in 2013 and 2014. Ms. Johnson will be speaking with you about the facilities recommendations from the Department of Education's task force on facility purposes. We've got some information on the special education formula changes that we'll be working through together. And then the fourth topic is on the integration revenue changes that were first effective for fiscal year 14. So those are the four areas we're going to focus on. Ms. Johnson and I are happy to answer any questions on school funding that you have. So don't feel like you're limited just by what's in this presentation. We're happy to share materials if you'd like copies of spreadsheets or files or other things. We can send those to you or sit down and meet with you to explain those in some detail. A couple of the changes that that we found probably are most significant in terms of the relationship between the legislature, the taxpayers, the voters, and the school districts, the school boards, had to do with the changes with the operating referendum and local optional revenue changes. There's two things in your packet. There's a copy of the PowerPoint that's also on the screen. There's also a printout that you can be referring to if you like that's labeled Estimated Local Optional Revenue for Fiscal Year 16 that's oriented landscape on the paper. So you may want to have those two with you as we walk through this presentation. Perhaps the biggest change that occurred was part of the 2013 tax bill. And what happened with the voter-approved operating referendum in the tax bill, a number of districts, about 10% of the school districts in the state, had not yet had a successful referendum election. And so part of the legislation that passed in 2013 authorized $300 per pupil unit of referendum revenue authority to be approved by a school board. Prior to that time, all the referendum authority was approved by the taxpayers, but beginning after the 2013 legislative session, a school board could choose to approve up to $300 of authority. If a district already had a referendum authority, that approval would come off the existing authority, but essentially what that means is that $300, while having to be renewed every 5 years by the board, will no longer need to be renewed by the taxpayers of the district. As a result of that change, I believe all the districts as of this fall now, all of the districts in the state of Minnesota now have at least $300 per pupil of referendum authority. Of those that transferred their authority to board approved for that first $300 per pupil, 142 school districts have made that change. Some of the districts that have not made the change find it easier to keep it as a single amount. Others have found reasons where they prefer their voters to approve the full amount. I expect that amount will change over time, but currently out of the 330 school districts, about 140 have school board approved referendum for the first $300 per pupil. Another change that happened in the 2013 session was increased amounts of equalization aid on the operating referendum. We're going to spend some time talking about equalization aid, and when Ms. Johnson talks about the facility recommendations, the state aid involved for equalization will be an important part of those discussions as well. In terms of that equalization on the operating referendum, that first $300 per pupil is now equalized at a higher level. It's equalized at an amount where only 12 school districts in the state don't qualify for aid. The way equalization works, essentially we look at the tax base of the school district, and for the operating referendum, it's on a type of tax base referred to as the referendum market value tax base. And we look at the dollars of tax base per pupil unit to determine what the district's relative property wealth is. If you look at the printout in the second column of the printout, up and down the page, you can see the referendum market value per pupil for each of the districts in the state. The statewide average is about $458,000 of tax base when measured that way per pupil, significantly more in the metro area than compared to greater Minnesota. The average in the metro area is about $537,000. The average in greater Minnesota is about $385,000 of referendum market value tax base per pupil. Another point to add here, the tax committee is going to be taking a careful look at tax bases this year. There's a lot of talk about what to do with agricultural taxes. You're likely to see some bills introduced on the referendum market value and how that's constructed. Tax base issues are an important part of this committee's work as well, so as those changes are proposed, they'll have an impact on our school funding formulas and something for the committee to keep an eye on. As I said, that first $300 per pupil of the referendum authority, whether or not it's approved by the board, is equalized at this higher level, this $880,000 per pupil unit. What that means is for the average district, about half of that $300 per pupil will come in state aid and the other half in local levy. As the districts get progressively more property wealthy, that amount diminishes. If the district is more property poor, the state aid amount increases. The second tier of the referendum, the operating referendum, is the next $460 per pupil. So if the voters, combined with the board action, have approved up to $760 of authority in the district, that middle tier, the $460, between $300 and $760, is equalized at $510,000 per pupil unit. That's a large enough equalizing factor, so all but about 60 of the school districts in the state get some equalization aid based on that part of the formula. And again, if you look up and down the list in the second column there, if you see a district with a tax base per pupil unit above $510,000 per pupil, that's a district where that second tier will not have any state aid for them. But as I said, all but about 60 districts do have state aid in that tier. And then finally, there's a third tier of equalization for up to 25% of the formula allowance, which is $1,458 per pupil. That's equalized at a relatively lower level at about $290,000 per pupil, which is well below both the metro and the greater Minnesota average. So only about a third of the state school districts receive any equalization once the referendum gets above $760 per pupil. A couple issues I think that you'll probably hear about. There's still going to probably be some interest in other amounts of the referendum, particularly for those questions that are simple renewals to be renewed by board action instead of by the voters. And I think you'll also see bills this session to undo the ability for boards to approve that first $300 and instead return the operating referendum entirely to the voters. But those will be issues that you'll likely see this session. The operating referendum, while voter approved and subject to equalization, is subject to some caps. There's a certain amount that a district cannot go over. If a district's eligible for sparsity revenue, which means that it's relatively geographically isolated, those school districts, which are currently about 100 of the school districts in Minnesota, are not subject to the referendum cap. But all other school districts in the state are subject to a cap that's equal to $1,845 per pupil of authority, with that amount adjusted up each year by inflation. So what that means is even if you're a very property wealthy school district and have a voting public that's very interested in supporting your schools, you still have a limit. You're limited to the amount of referendum authority that your district can pass. Finally, the 2013 change included another category of revenue that's now called local optional revenue, and that local optional revenue we're going to talk about in a second, but one of the effects of that revenue being created was it did create some room under the cap for some of the districts with higher levels of referendum revenue authority. We'll look at some referendum revenue printouts a little later this session, and you'll see how the referendum revenue varies by district. We'll look at the equalization on some printouts as well, but we wanted to sort of give you an overview level of those changes with the operating referendum. So, Madam Chair, members, that's primarily what happened with the operating referendum. Now we'll talk just a minute about the elections, because there's been some talk about this as well, and then we'll move on to a discussion on the local optional revenue. There are two kinds of school district elections. There's an election for an operating referendum, which is additional money to spend for general purposes, and there's a bond issue. Bond issues can be held throughout the year. Operating referendum elections generally have to be held at the November election date. There's a couple exceptions to that. The first of those is if your district is going to have an election by mail ballot, it can happen at any time during the year. And secondly, if the district is in statutory operating debt, which means that they have a fund balance that's more than 2.5% in the red, then the district may develop a plan to get out of statutory operating debt, and if the Commissioner of Education approves that plan, can hold an election at a date other than the November election date. Those elections still have to line up with the regular calendar for elections, so they can't be too close to another election. But if a district's in statutory operating debt, it can have an election at any time in the school year. Generally, districts are limited to one election per year, but for those districts in statutory operating debt, if they receive the approval of the commissioner, they can have more than one election per year. The next page we won't spend much time on, but just for your background, shows the last 8 years or so of referendum election trends. The chart shows at the top line the election year, then shows the total number of dollars in millions that were requested, the number approved, the percent overall rate, and then separates out those amounts that were revenue increases over as opposed to outright renewals, and shows the percentage success for those. You can see the percentages have varied pretty dramatically by year, with the last 2 years having relatively high percentages of elections, referendum elections, succeeding. The second change that the 2013 legislature enacted split some money off the referendum for most districts and put it in a category called local optional revenue. When the revenue was first created in 2013 for the metropolitan school districts, they were authorized up to $424 of local optional revenue, which could be approved essentially by their board. If they had a referendum, it was offset against their referendum. If not, it was additional revenue for the school district. In addition to the metro districts, districts in greater Minnesota were given $212 per pupil of the same type of authority. The 2014 legislature came back and extended that same authority to all districts in the state. So all districts in the state now have $424 per pupil of maximum authority in the local optional revenue category. Local optional revenue is equalized at the same rate as the second tier of the operating referendum at $510,000 per pupil. A district's not required to use its local optional revenue, but may annually tell the Department of Education it's not interested or in any or all of that revenue. For the effects of the local optional revenue, there were really three or four primary effects. For school districts like North Branch that had no voter-approved referendum, the combination of this change and the operating referendum change meant that the school board could make a decision to add the $300 of board-approved referendum levy, and once the 2014 changes were made, could add up to $424 of local optional revenue. So for some school districts in the state, local optional revenue meant additional revenue for spending purposes. For other districts in the state, particularly those with significant amounts of referendum, the change with local optional revenue meant a reduction in their referendum and an increase in their local optional revenue of the same amount, but because it shifted amongst the tiers of equalization, meant more state aid and less local levy for the same amount of revenue. And lastly, for some high referendum, high tax base districts, they benefited neither by the additional equalization aid or the extra authority, since it was offset against their referendum revenue. But where they did get a benefit was they were provided space under their referendum cap so that they could go back to the voters at some future election. So those were really the effects of the local optional revenue. We're in our first year currently of that revenue. First applies for fiscal year 15. The levy was certified this fall for pay 15, which is the fiscal 16 school year, and that second year we're just now getting the data for to look at how districts are utilizing that local optional revenue. Then we've got a couple of charts thrown in here to give you just some general sense of how much referendum and local equity revenue per student there is out there. You can see in 2003, after some major changes to the school funding system, districts started with about $352 per pupil of referendum authority. In 2015, it's our best guess that there's about $1,170 per pupil, and the two lines below that show those on inflation-adjusted measures using the first, the CPI, in the longer dashed line, the red line, and then as adjusted using the implicit price deflator on the dotted line. So this gives you a sense of the overall scale of the referendum and local equity revenue. There's some big changes. They affected the board behavior. They affected the board's relationships with their taxpayers, and they also quite strongly affected the revenue in some school districts. We're just going to take a brief look at the top line here. We're going to talk more about equalization aid, but if you look at the blue line, the top line on this graph, you can see that the operating referendum, the state share of that that's paid for based on equalization, had been declining pretty substantially during most of the 2000s, and then has started to increase, and then with this change this last in the 2013 session, first effective for 2015, you can see that the share that the state's paying of the local operating referendum has gone back up fairly significantly to the low 20%. So, Madam Chair, that's a quick discussion of local optional revenue and the referendum revenue.
Just a couple of questions I have for you, Mr. Strom, and if other members have questions, just raise your hand. But just a quick question on page 5, you mentioned those districts and statutory operating debt and their ability to hold a referendum anytime. Do you know happen to know how many districts we currently have that are in statutory operating debt?
Madam Chair, we'll check on that and get back to you in a minute here. I've got that on a different file here. That surprisingly enough, the last for the last 10 years, even with the relatively hard times that were faced in some parts of the economy, including on some of the school budgets, we have had a steadily diminishing number of school districts and charter schools in statutory operating debt. And in 2013, we had a little tick up, but that overall level was declining at a pretty fast rate for most of the last decade. I think school districts in general built up some bigger fund balances in the early 2000s and were reluctant to dip into those. And so as a result, we've really got a very low level of districts in statutory operating debt. The department puts out an excellent report each year that shows those districts, and I'll see if I can open that file for you real quick here while we have another question.
All right. Thank you. And just my other question had to do with the referendum trends, and then just noticing that, you know, kind of through the mid-2000s, I would say on average somewhere in the 60-ish percent. And then now as we're getting into the the last few years, the percentage of referendums passing is pretty high, 86 to 80%. And I'm just wondering if you could break that out for us. Is there any indicators you see from that, or is a large percentage of those perhaps renewals of levies, or how would you categorize the trend that we're seeing in the last few years?
Madam Chair, I'm always surprised at the election results with the operating referendums. I'm never able to understand why some years are successful years and other years not. Generally, we found that elections that are held during the even-numbered year, when there are more general elections, tend to do more poorly. But in terms of why 2013 is a great year and 2011 is not such a good year, much harder for me to know if there's a pattern. So I'm not aware of any analysis that say this is why or not. It doesn't seem like it's correlated with the amount of money that's added to the formula. It doesn't seem to be correlated with some other election trends. So I really don't have a guess on that one.
All right. Well, I was hoping you had a crystal ball there for us, Mr. Strom. But the will of the voters is the will of the voters, isn't it? Representative Anderson, you had a question?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Strom, on page 3 of your PowerPoint, talking about the referendum equalization amounts, those figures, $880,510, as they pertain to the market value, the referendum market value tax base, and as it pertained to ag land, does that include the house in 1 acre or all ag land?
Yeah. Madam Chair, Representative Anderson, that's a very good question. The definition that we use for referendum market value excludes all ag land except the house, garage, and 1 acre. There are two classes of property that are excluded from the operating referendum levy, and those are seasonal rec property, which is the cabins, and then the ag land. So the house, garage, and 1 acre is in that measure. All of the rest of the ag lands are outside of that measure. And the definition of referendum market value, essentially the market value of the property, of the entire property in each district, includes what that property would sell at for each of the classes of property. But then when we go to apply the referendum market value, that excludes those two categories, cabins and farmland, other than the house, garage, and 1 acre.
All right. Thank you. Representative Anzels.
Thank you, Madam Chair. One thing I've learned serving on this committee is that questions from members tend to beget more questions from members, and sometimes it never ends. But my question, although this may sound overly simplistic, but because property wealth drives so much of our fiscal relationship between the state and local districts, is there a way, or have you already done this, is there a way to rank districts by property wealth to such a degree that an average person can reach some very important conclusions about some very complicated topics?
Mr. Strom.
Madam Chair, Representative Anselm, Ms. Johnson and I will put together a list for you for our next meeting that will rank the tax base, and we'll also put the referendum, if we can get the referendum tax rate on there for you. You can see how that tax rate, you'll see the dollars per kid, the referendum tax rate, and the tax base per pupil, and we'll rank those from greatest to least so you can see where the differences are in that tax base per pupil.
Madam Chair, again, great staff. Great staff.
Thank you, and thank you for the question. I think that will be really good information for the entire committee. I appreciate that. Representative Crescia, you had a question.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Mr. Strom and Ms. Johnson, thank you very much. I miss my neighbor. I'd like to take a little bit of what Representative Anderson and Representative Anzels asked, and do you have any stats breaking out a noticeable difference between the success rate of bond or levy referendums in high ag districts versus business and retail?
Mr. Strom.
Representative Creature, that's an excellent question. The bond referendums are spread on net tax capacity, as you know, and so the ag land is in that definition that's used. Certainly the newspaper clippings suggest that some of those ag districts have a much harder time passing the bond issues. I'd have to think of a methodology to use here because the tax base is so different and the size of the questions varies so much. We'll put together a list for you. That may take us more than till tomorrow to do that, of the recent bond issues and look at some of the characteristics of those districts. Certainly the area where you hear about the failures the most are in the high the high ag land districts, and also the case where you often hear the most when one is successful. For instance, up in Representative Nornes's area, the Rothsay School District passed a bond issue about a year and a half ago. It was very controversial on a district that was almost entirely ag. But we'll see if we can get a list together for you that give you some information on that.
Representative Krishna.
And thank you for that, and thank you, Madam Chair. And thank you for the follow-up. It certainly is not a 24-hour thing, but I think in light of what you mentioned, yes, we will see some proposed policy changes on that house, 1 acre, and garage, and these stats would be very important to go along with that. So thank you for that.
Oh, thank you, Representative Krishna. Thank you, Mr. Strom. Representative Quam.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I was wondering if it was possible, in previous years, the department had shown us some tools of where they had access to the database and that certain groups could go into queries, and seeing the interest across many different members, it might be interesting if we could find out if there are ways to get accessibilities to drive our own queries so we could run scattergrams and other statistical analysis and not have staff, go through the churn.
All right. Thank you, Representative Quam. I will investigate that possibility with staff, and we'll let the committee know that tomorrow. Thank you. Other questions on this component? Since we are like 3 minutes from our ending time, I think we'll suspend with the presentation from nonpartisan staff at this point. We'll pick it back up tomorrow at 12:45. And in the meantime, again, committee members, if you have a chance to look over the rules, if you have any questions or concerns, please let me know. Please make sure that you save your materials in the save file for the presentations we'll be continuing. You'll save us much time and trees and photocopying if you'll do that. And there are no other questions or comments. The committee is adjourned for the day. Thank you.